This is the last day of this January 2010 seven-day session. And we'll take up another koan today. This is from the Blue Cliff record. Number 92, the world-honored one ascends the seat. One day the world-honored one took his seat on the platform. Manjusri struck the table with the gavel and said, "Clearly understand the Dharma of the King of the Dharma. The Dharma of the King of Dharma is like this." The world-honored one descended from his seat. The Blue Cliff record is widely considered the greatest single text in a literary sense for sure, in the whole history of Zen. And I think I've heard that it is also beyond Zen circles, it is considered a great work. There were many times in the biography of Hakuin that we read from in the earlier days of this session. There were many times that it said that he went to such and such a temple and lectured on the Blue Cliff record. It's 100 koans compiled by Chinese master Yuan Wu. And there are additional pieces to it, what's called a pointer, a verse, a commentary. But in Doksan, we only work on the main case, which we just read. I'll just mention that Manjusri, we think of primarily as the Bodhisattva of wisdom. But tradition says that he was an actual disciple, close, deeply enlightened disciple of the Buddha in his time. Same with Kanon, by the way, Avalokiteshvara, and others, Samanta Bahaja. These names that we know from the Honzon echo in our chanting, "Faith in Buddha Dharma Sangha brings true liberation. We now return the merit of our chanting to Shakyamuni Buddha Manjusri Bodhisattva, Avalokita Bodhisattva Bahadra Bodhisattva." As far as the Buddha himself, I'm just going to mention some random things about the Buddha. As they come to my mind, I often remind people that the word Buddha by itself just means awakening or enlightenment or the enlightened nature that we all have in common. That's Buddha. Whereas when we say the Buddha, we refer to Shakyamuni Buddha, the man. But it is so difficult when we hear the word Buddha or read the word Buddha, it is so difficult not to make that into the person. I still see this this sort of reflex in myself when I see Buddha, is to think of the Buddha. think it's very difficult when we have this person so prominently in our tradition who sits at the summit of this mountain of the Dharma. It's so difficult to not see the word Buddha as him. But it's such a limited way to understand the word. It's a very rich word, one of these Sanskrit terms that has multiple levels to it. So just the single word Buddha really means Buddha nature. In the many koans where a monk asks, what is Buddha? That's really the meaning. That's his real question. Not what is that guy who lived in India a long time ago. What is Buddha nature? He is said to be the only person known in our tradition, in this at least in this world cycle, to have attained supreme, perfect enlightenment. I don't think it's necessary to see him in such absolute terms to have complete faith in his teaching. Personally, I always, not always, but more recently, in recent, I don't know, 20 years, I've found it a little bit hard to imagine how someone who attained absolute perfect enlightenment would still have a body and knowing the Indian tendency toward glorifying in exaggerated ways things, well, again, we don't have to buy into this absolutist language in terms of the Buddha's enlightenment. Clearly, he is one of the most profoundly enlightened of anyone in our tradition, as far as we know. There are this vast collection of texts, sutras, and other texts that are attributed to the Buddha. How can we be sure? He wrote, he spoke every word in there. During his lifetime, nothing of his teaching was written down. Not only that, but his teachings weren't written down until 200 years after his life. But does it matter? Once we have begun to confirm the teachings in the text, the Buddha's teachings, the sutras, then it's sort of beside the point whether it was him or some other great enlightened person who came out with these texts, these sutras. Hundreds of volumes of teachings that are attributed to the Buddha. Other traditions other than Zen do a lot more in the way of studying these teachings. But in Zen, it's always the spirit behind his words, and or even more, the experience he had, not what he is purported to have said, but the experience itself. Zen is widely referred to as the mystical school of Buddhism. I understand mystical as the school of any world religion or spiritual tradition, the school that emphasizes direct experience, not texts, not even the biography of the Buddha, but his experience under the Bodhi tree. I think it was the historian Arnold Toynbee who once proposed that the Buddha was the most influential person in the history of the world. He's basing that largely on the number of people over the millennia who have followed his way, his Dharma. And it all began under that tree. On a pilgrimage to India, we went to three of the four main sites where the Buddha roamed. We didn't make it to his birthplace, but made it to Bodh Gaya, the site of his enlightenment, and to Deer Park, the place where he gave his first discourse, the Four Noble Truths, and then also his Kushinagar, where he came to his Parinirvana. And also a couple of other places, Vulture Peak, where he held up a flower before the assembly of monks, and only Mahakashapa smiled. And one or two other places, and it's very moving to walk on the very ground where he is said to have walked and talked. I think of that as I see this first sentence, that one day the world honored one took his seat on the platform. I picture the platform is not that different from the one I'm sitting on, the individual tan that I use for Taisho, maybe more ornate. I picture the monks in the assembly on the ground. Surely they were. And it would help for the monks to see him, for him to be raised. So Manjusri was at his side. The world wanted one, pulled his legs up into the full lotus, undoubtedly. And then, right away, Manjusri strikes the table with a gavel. Clearly understand the Dharma of the King of the Dharma. The Dharma of the King of Dharma is like this. We read in one of the commentaries on this koan that this phrase was the formula that was pronounced at the end of the Buddha's each of the Buddha's talks. This is what was said for all of them. At the beginning of his talks, the phrase, "Illustrious disciples assembled here, listen to the first principle of the Dharma." And then at the end, what we already read. So clearly, Manjusri feels understanding enough of the Buddha's Dharma, Shakyamuni's Dharma, that he just went right in and announced that without a single word from the Buddha. In the commentary to this koan, that is the author's commentary, the author of the Blue Cliff Record says, "Some say that the meaning, that is of the silence, the meaning lies in the silence. Some say it lies in the pause, that speech illumines what cannot be said, and speechlessness illumines what can be said." And then this guy quotes another great Chinese master, Yung Chia, as saying, "Speaking when silent, silent when speaking." And then he says, "But if you only understand in this way, then past, present, and future, for 60 eons, you will still never have seen it even in dreams." So long as one is interpreting it, as long as you're interpreting it, you miss it. As long as you're on the realm of meaning, you've missed it. It's more simple than that. More direct. In the same commentary, this master said, "It is like the story of Su Tsung asking national teacher Chung about making a seamless memorial tower, and also like the story of the outsider asking Buddha, 'I do not ask about the spoken or the unspoken.'" These are two other koans, actually. The first one about the seamless monument is also in the Blue Cliff Record, where the emperor asked the national teacher, who was on his deathbed, "After 100 years, when you are no longer with us, what will you need?" The national teacher said, "Build a seamless monument for this old monk." To which the emperor said, "Please tell me, master, what the monument should look like." And then the national teacher was silent for a long time. And then he asked, "Do you understand?" In the other koan, it reads, "A non-Buddhist once asked the world, 'Honored One, I do not ask for words, I do not ask for no words.'" To which the world, Honored One, just sat still. And after a while, the non-Buddhist praised him, saying, "The world, Honored One, with his great compassion, has dispelled the clouds of my delusion and has enabled me to enter the way." And he made a deep bow of gratitude and left. At which Ananda asked the Buddha, "What was it this non-Buddhist realized that he praised you so?" And the world, Honored One, replied, "A first-class horse moves at even the shadow of the whip." Just as that silence of the Buddha went completely over Ananda's head, we can be sure that this silence of the Buddha in today's koan went over the head of many in the assembly, although the records say that there were a great many illustrious monks and nuns and lay people in the assembly, enlightened people. This koan is more, perhaps even more subtle than the one where Shakyamuni held up a flower and just twirled it. At least there, those in the assembly have some sign from the Buddha himself. A visual indication, whereas in this one, it's just the Buddha sitting. And that is no doubt why Manjusri felt obliged to make the point in words for the many there who wouldn't have understood it, clearly understand the Dharma of the King of the Dharma. The Dharma of the King of Dharma is like this. There was a Chinese master who was referring to an earlier one. No, his own. He's referring to his own master who had just died. And he said, "Great as he was in what he said, he was greater still in what he left unsaid." In speech, speech so easily complicates this simple Dharma. It can be, as soon as words are proposed, they can be misunderstood, and they can stimulate this discriminating mind and then lead us further from the simple experience itself. You know, this old Taoist saying, he who knows does not speak, he who speaks does not know. Well, the Buddha spoke hundreds or thousands of texts, so he was not attached to silence. The great Yunmen, known in Japan as Ummon, was especially strong about the danger of words. He was said to have been an exceptionally brilliant, intelligent person and brilliant with words, which may be why he realized the danger of words. One time he said, "Do not say that I am deceiving you today by means of words. The fact is that I am put under the necessity of speaking before you and thereby sowing seeds of confusion in your minds. If a true seer should see what I am doing, what a laughingstock I would be in his eyes. But now there is no escape from it." There were other Chinese masters who made the same explicit kind of statements. I only run the risk of obscuring the truth by talking about it, but here I am. That's what I do. There's no escape from it. Another time, Yunmen said, "Again, my duty compels me to attempt the impossible. Even in telling you to look directly into yourself and to be unconcerned about other things, I am already burying the real thing under verbiage. If you then proceed from there and set out in quest of words and sentences, cudgeling your brains over their logical meanings, working out 1,000 possibilities and 10,000 subtle distinctions, and creating endless questions and debates, all that you will gain is a glib tongue, while at the same time getting further and further away from the Tao, with no rest to your wandering. If this thing could really be found in words, are there not enough words in the three vehicles and the 12 divisions of sutras? Why should there be a special transmission outside the sutras?" And that is how Zen was known for centuries, special transmission outside of the sutras without reliance on words. One more here. This is from an earlier Chinese master who was asked by his teacher, in the 40 rolls of the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, how many words are the Buddhas and how many the demons? And his disciple, who went on to become a great master, Yangshan's answer was, "All words belong to the demon." We're told that the master was so delighted by this answer that he said to his disciple, "Hereafter, no one will be able to do anything to you." after Manjushri made his statement, the world-honored one descended from his seat. If I can second guess the great Manjushri, he would have done better with dispensing with the words and just leaving it at. Or even better, We'll stop now and recite the four vows.